It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I have a story for you.
All right, let's hear your story.
Imagine there is an isolated community. We don't get their backstory or anything, but they are alone. It is unclear, but we have this community, and they subsist primarily on gathering. They leave their home and they go find things.
Okay.
One day, near the community, out of nowhere, two giant obelisks appear on their sides. And they are hollow inside, and the people of the community find that everything they could need is in here, including just a huge amount of food, so they can survive. It's not limitless, but like generations that haven't been born yet are the ones who are going to have to figure out what to do if it runs out. So they start subsisting on this. They take it back to their home. And it's great, and everybody's living high on the hog. And occasionally, members of the community will explore further out. But they either return empty-handed or they don't return at all, as if someone or something doesn't want them expanding out into the world. Anyway, it's all creepy and suspicious or whatever. And then at the climax, what we finally find out is the food in the obelisks is slowly but surely poisoning them and wiping out the whole
thing. Oh my goodness.
Yes. This is not actually a movie or anything. It's something I'm doing with some ants in my bathroom. We have largely taken care of most of it. It's been a bad season for insects in our house in particular. We have largely handled the moths and most of the varieties of ants via various traps and things. But the little teeny, teeny, teeny ones that I have heard referred to as moisture ants, still kind of troublesome. And so we've got these bait traps and we put them on the bathtub because they're coming out of a little crack in the wall. I have some good spray, but I'm like, I want to get rid of them. So, you know, it's a bait trap. So they eat it and then they go back and they bring it to the others and then slowly. And when I'm on the toilet, they're like right there and I watch them feeding and then sometimes they wander away and I squish those ones. And eventually I realized this is basically like an episode of The Twilight Zone. Like this is a really bad M. Night Shyamalan movie or something. And I have this like alien intelligence that is controlling them. So I was kind of into it.
That is interesting. And I think that's where a lot of
movies, but given it's real life, it's kind of cool.
I think that's where Twilight Zone / M. Night Shyamalan / who's the other person I'm thinking of that would make this kind of movie? Well, anyway, it is that kind of, I think that is the origin of a lot of these stories is someone goes, hey, you know what? What if these ants were people and this was going on? What would that be like?
M. Night Shyamalan staring at ant traps going, what if Bruce Willis was dead the whole time?
Well, but I'm also thinking of, I'm blanking on the name. There are other people that make that kind of stuff.
I was just thinking, I you would appreciate this, I think, because I think you know her. I have recently been taken over by Amanda the Jedi's YouTube channel.
No, I don't think I know who that is.
She does mostly movie review stuff. And she's not that popular, but it must be in line with my things because she's popped up every once in a while. And I thought you knew her. I thought you and I had traded videos at some point, but I've been watching her. And she recently did The Watchers, which is M. Night Shyamalan's daughter's movie.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that his daughter made
Yeah,
that.
it's his daughter who did it. But it made me realize when I was like, so the dude's name is M. Night Shyamalan. Does that mean his friends call him Night?
Well, I mean, it's a made-up name, I'm pretty sure. It's like he wasn't born with that, or that's not his given name. I think he made it up. So maybe people just call him his given name. I don't know.
Because, like, my dad goes by his middle name, which is Kent, or did when he was alive. And his first name is actually Philip. And he would be, in most things, he's P. Kent Parsons, because he goes by Kent. And I was like, do people call him Knight? That's weird. Also, his daughter's middle name is also Knight.
Oh, yeah, my dad went by his middle name, but sometimes people called him Darl, but sometimes they called him Daryl and he hated that. It was supposed to be Darl, not Daryl.
My dad's whole immediate family went by their middle names for some reason.
Oh.
And then later in life, some of them stopped doing that, and it always confused me. So, like, my Uncle Bruce, who I knew as my Uncle Bruce forever, nobody calls him Bruce. Because that's not what he's gone by in decades, but that's what I knew for a very long time.
We noticed on this on the gravestone. I mean, I hadn't noticed this before, but when we went, to visit Dad's grave or whatever, and Mom's buried there too. It says D. Wright and Roberta Wright, but Roberta was also Mom's middle name. So, if you're a genealogist, 100 years from now, and you find this stone, you won't even know that the names you see on there are their middle names, not their first names. I think if I had realized Dad was going to do that, I would have said, "Hey, put an initial or something in there so people know." Because as a genealogist, I get very frustrated by a difference between names on a stone and names in records because sometimes you just don't know and you have to guess. There's no other evidence to support that this person's birth certificate is this person who their gravestone. So.
Can you pay to have a small gravestone next to it with an addendum, just like an asterisk, and it's like actually,
Appendix.
yeah, and like it won't take up any more real estate. Do it right at the gravesite. So, I mean, it should really only be the cost of the stone.
Well, actually, the thing is, all of us kids' names are on it too, but it Bill, it says Bill, it doesn't say William. So that's another thing.
Technically, Trish and I have a couple of grave sites with our names on them that we will never use.
Yeah, you told me that once. That's interesting.
Various parts of the world. Well, Trish wants to be buried, but she specifically wants to rot. So I think we may have to find specific, like, because there are more and more there are ecological ways to be buried. But the legality state by state still varies, but hopefully she's not gonna die for quite a while, and then we'll see.
Well, right.
And I have always been very staunchly, I just want to be cremated until the last few years where I have gotten on board with Trish's plan, which is whatever the fuck she wants to do with it. I do not care.
Right. And most of our plans, regardless of what they are like the one you were just saying, we've thought of that too, but that's not something that happens in a cemetery, right? That happens someplace else. And then your remains are not going to be buried next to your mom or dad or whatever, because it doesn't work like that. But you can still have a stone somewhere as a memorial to you that when people go see, like when someone sees my dad or visits my dad's grave, I can have a stone there so that, oh, there's Uncle Bill's stone or whatever. He's not buried there, but that's his memorial. I think we'll do something like that.
I don't know if anybody will. Like, when Trish and I die, I mean, okay, when one of us dies, I don't think the other one is going to bother to make sure that the death date gets filled in on these stones in Oregon. And I think Georgia, maybe there's not one in Georgia. I'm not sure. And when we both die, I can't imagine who would bother. Like, we don't have kids.
Right, right. And so, like, the Black Angel here in Iowa City is fairly famous, you know, for being, like, a thing people actually come to see. The woman who commissioned that and had it installed and whatever, she's buried there, but her death date's not in there because there wasn't anybody, you know, whose responsibility it was to put that in. Dad's death date's not in there. It adds to the creep factor of it, right? It's like, why is there no death date for this person? But it's just because there wasn't anyone who was responsible to, you know, for that. That
makes me feel better now that years down the road after my death, I could add to the creep factor.
People will look and they'll say, how come like Anthony
187?
Yeah. Where, how come Anthony doesn't have a death date? Oh, you know, is he a vampire? Did he die alone somewhere? And there's nobody who cares.
I mean, hopefully not that one. That one's like,
well, I'm just saying it's a thing that people will stop and think about. Like, they'll notice your name and they'll talk about you that way forever. Because if it had a date, they'd just gloss over it, wouldn't even care. But they're gonna note, oh, there's no date there. There's no way he's 200 years old. What happened?
Or maybe I won't die, and then it'll be accurate. I'll just hang out in a folding chair next to the gravestone and be like, yep, that's me.
That's me.
Holy shit. Fuck that. I'm going to do that now. I'm going to go to a graveyard and find like a real old one that has no death date. And just sit next to it. And when people come by, I say, yeah, that's me.
That's me.
I'm 134. I don't do much anymore. I just hang out here, but it confuses people. So I'm just here to let them know.
Even better if the person was a woman.
Yeah. I've been through some shit. You don't even know. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that exists for one reason and one reason only: to step up your egg game. I am Tony.
And I am William, and this is episode 695.
So, eggs. Hard-boiled eggs.
Okay.
I like hard-boiled eggs. Generally not on their own, but I love egg salad. For egg salad, you need some hard-boiled eggs.
What about deviled eggs? You like deviled eggs?
I also like deviled eggs.
Yeah.
But to me, deviled eggs are just fancy egg salad.
Okay.
like you took what? Deviled eggs and just mushed them up. Egg salad. I love deviled eggs, but like I won't make them because I just make egg salad. But yeah, no, I eat a lot of deviled eggs when I get the chance. You gotta boil the eggs. How do you boil the eggs?
How?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
give me your egg boiling process.
It's been a long time for me, but you bring the water to a boil, and there's also salt in it, I think. Like you put a little salt in there, and then you boil them for some period of time that I don't remember, a few minutes. Now, I never did learn like the tricks about when you take it out or what. Like I just would boil them for a given period of time, and that usually worked. It never was a problem. But some people have tricks about when to know when they're ready and done and stuff. Maybe I overboiled them. I don't know.
Exactly. It's a disaster.
They seem fine to me.
It is one of the few practical things that if you ask the internet, 1,000,000,000 different answers.
Oh, really? Because I've never looked it up. I just did it and it worked out.
You start with cold water and you put the eggs in when it's cold.
I never did
that. You put in water and you boil it and then you put the eggs in.
Yep,
you add salt to the water. You don't add salt to the water. Yep. You boil them for 6 minutes. You boil them for 10 minutes. You put them in cold water until it gets to boil and then you turn the heat off and then you just let them sit there for a certain amount of time.
I think I did it for 5 minutes.
You immediately put them in cold water to shock them and make them easier to peel. You don't do that. Like,
oh, I think I
there's
might have done
just
that one.
so many. And sometimes it has worked for me. Sometimes they have come out soft boiled. Sometimes they have come out where, like, the whole yolk is, like, practically green, which is a sign that you overdid it. And, I mean, it eats, but it's not as good.
Oh, green, that's how you know? A little bit of
well,
green?
Well, yeah, if you overboil, you can tell the edge of it turns green. That's sort of the color changes. There's the yolk, and then it turns orange, and then it turns yellow. And
I think I've had that. Yeah, I think I've had that problem before where it's a little green on the edge. Yeah, I think
I've
had
that problem. And that just means you overdid it. I mean, it's like cooking a steak too long. It's not, like, going to kill you. It's just
right.
I hate all of this. I love egg salad. I hardly ever make it because I can't. I don't. And this is my thing also. I need to know the method. And I've tried different ones, and it drove me crazy. I need to have a method that works. I have a method that works. It's fucking simple. I've only done it once. I'm going to do it again. It's fucking super easy. All
right. What is
Barely
it?
Inconvenience. All right. Here's what you're going to need. You're going to need some eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you are going to need a muffin tray, like those metal ones that have the divots for muffins.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need muffin papers or cups or anything, just a tray. And in theory, you could do this another method. The whole point of the tray is if you put an egg in it, it won't move. Like,
okay.
They won't roll. If you put them on a cookie sheet, they go crazy. So you put them in it.
They go crazy.
Exactly. So you put eggs. You don't do anything to them. You don't, like, have to poke a hole or shake them or certain temperature. You just put them in the divots of the muffin tray. 325 degree oven, 25 to 30 minutes. Take them out, and you don't got to put them in cold water, nothing. They're very easy to peel. They taste super good. The only weird thing about them is when you peel them, there are some brown spots where, like, it kind of, you know, burned, I guess, the egg a little bit, but it doesn't taste anything. It just looks a little weird. But they're super good, and it was ridiculously easy.
So you don't boil them at all. You bake them.
No, you bake them, but they come out like hard-boiled eggs. I mean, they come out the same.
Cool. That's cool.
Kicks ass. I was at my father-in-law's 80th surprise birthday party, and I was talking with old people, as I am wont to do in those situations, and the topic of eggs came. Oh, I think because the topic of deviled eggs, because the last time I had been there, I'd eaten a lot of deviled eggs of a certain person who was present. And so then we're talking about that, and then we're talking about boiling eggs, and some person who I didn't know but who knew me, some old lady, was like, I heard you could make them. And she texted me a thing, and I was like, I'm going to check it out. And I did, and it was perfect.
Hmm.
I still got three from the last time. I'm going to eat them at lunch after we're done here. Yeah.
Wonder
325 degrees. 25 to 30 minutes. That's
I wonder if a person's annoyed by the brown spot, like you said, it doesn't matter, but if someone's annoyed by it, I wonder if they did put paper cups in that would solve that problem, I wonder.
Yeah. And in theory, you don't even need the muffin tray. You could just put them on a cookie sheet, but yeah, then it'd be crazy, and it'd be really hard. The point is 325 degrees, 25 to 30 minutes. Yeah, and they were quite easy to peel, I found. So
I think, so as you were talking about it, I think it was 5 minutes that I would do it. And I think I sometimes did that cold water thing for peeling. I think I did that sometimes too. But sometimes I did have that green thing happen, but not always. Which is weird because it's like, I'm pretty sure I did it the same every time. So I don't know why one time it would be over and one time it would be, I don't even know why it would ever differ or vary. But mom's always came out perfect. Mom's always did. I don't know. She had a good sense of it. I don't know.
People do. I mean, eggs get boiled all the time.
Right.
I just can't even cope. And I've tried over the years, but this one is super, super easy.
Okay.
So I'm going to be eating a lot more eggs.
Good.
Yeah, I love it.
Eggs are good for you, and the number one egg producer in the country is this state right here.
Oh, I didn't know pigs laid eggs. That's weird.
Eggs, pigs, and corn. That's our thing.
And beef. We actually do a lot of beef here
We
too.
do, and soybeans, yes. We
And soybeans.
move around on the top 10 on those, but we're pretty much consistently the top producers in corn, eggs, and well, we get beat with corn at the, in the corn game too sometimes, but pretty consistently number one in corn, pretty much always number one in pigs and eggs. I don't think we have a very close competitor for eggs either.
So congratulations.
We're the breakfast the breakfast state.
I could be a good motto. I like that.
I
All right. So, how's your week been? Are you still on vacation or did you work this week?
No, we no, I worked last week, yeah. It was a short week because of the fourth.
Yes.
So, and we did buy fireworks and go down to the farm and shoot off fireworks and stuff, which was really
Oh,
super
okay.
fun.
That's
Was
cool.
super, super fun. And I had to sort of I only saw clients 2 days and I kind of had to cram them all into those 2 days, but that was fine. That worked out okay. This week will be
You
easier
can like
because
fix up their issues, be like, oh crap, that was my last one. Sorry.
this week will be easier. I'll have that my days are going to be not only am I going to have fewer clients on each day, but they're not even like right next to each other. So I'll have time to put in a person's notes between. So this week will be better that way. I did see the movie I saw this week was the Godzilla X Kong or whatever. New
Oh,
Empire
the
or
new
whatever.
one, the new one.
Yeah.
With the
It
power glove.
with the power. It was
And the hollower earth.
it was the worst one yet. And but it did well. It did well in the theaters. So I don't know. I mean, I think they're gonna make some more, but none of the films in this reboot that that started in 2014, I think. I don't remember who directed it now, but none of them have been good. A few of them have been watchable. I actually liked Skull Island okay.
I've
But
heard when Skull Island came out, I didn't hear good things, but like I think time has been kind to it. People are like, actually, that's pretty good.
so it yeah, I liked it okay. Here's the thing. It's kind of like the Alien movies. Like very few of the Alien movies, and especially if you include Prometheus and stuff like that, really hold up on their own. Very few of them. But, I remember telling you on the podcast, I think, I watched like all of them in chronological order and stuff. And it's like seeing them all together is actually kind of interesting. Like the through line is actually really pretty interesting. And really, the second one is the weakest one. It's like for some people, that's their favorite movie. But when you watch them all together, it doesn't fit at all. And it's okay, but when you watch them all together, it's like, okay, individually these movies aren't very good, but I kind of like the bigger story. And that's the same for this new series. Like the individual films, some of them are okay, some of them are just not good. And actually, I felt like the Marvel movies were that way too, where it's like individual movies might not be very good, but when you put the whole thing together, it's actually kind of fun to watch and it's interesting.
Up till Endgame, yeah.
Yeah, well. That these movies are kind of like I think I could sit down and watch them all in one thing and kind of find them interesting. But I have to say one of the things that makes that so is I'd also have to watch the TV show in there. Like right
Oh, yeah.
between the first Godzilla movie, like the way I'd have to watch it is Skull Island first, because that's chronologically the oldest thing, I think, in this series of films. That's chronologically the oldest thing. And then the first Godzilla movie, then the TV show, and then everything else. And that the TV show is actually quite good, in my opinion. I thought that was really good. And if I watched it all together, I think, some things would be, make me roll my eyes. But overall, I think this is actually pretty good. For some reason, because as you know, while I appreciated like giant monster movies, like, for my whole life, because I think, oh, they're kind of fun or whatever. I wasn't like a fan of them. And then, like, a few years ago, and I talked about it on the podcast, so I don't remember, maybe it was 10 years ago, I don't remember when I actually watched the original Godzilla for the first time or something. And we talked about it. I don't know when it was. And I watched some, I watched the first King Kong and like the one from the 70s and things like that. And I got really interested in the genre. And I think I've even developed an appreciation for it where I actually like it quite a bit, to the extent that I can see a movie that's a kaiju movie that's not very good and I can still enjoy it because I just like that thing now.
You're the biggest kaiju fan I know, which isn't saying much, but
well, but it's like it's a very recent development in my life. You know, it's like I really kind of like this. So
next step, we got to see all the Ultraman movies and TV shows next.
Well, there's some Ultraman animated stuff that I've tried to start watching because I know that that's part of the kaiju. And I do kind of like them, but we haven't really watched very much of it. And I'd kind of like to go back and watch Guillermo del Toro's, what's it called?
Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to rewatch that because when I first saw those, I liked them. Okay, they were interesting. But now I feel like I have a more of an appreciation of that kind of thing. And so maybe it'll have a different impact on me watching it now. So I kind of want to watch those again, but I don't know. It's interesting to have your taste change over time as you kind of like, you kind of take a different perspective on things. And I've experienced this before because the fact of the matter is Star Wars, when I was a kid, I liked it okay, but mostly because my brother did. I wasn't like a super fan of Star Wars. And then in college, I kind of got
your midichlorians kicked in.
No, it's what happened in college was there were some ideas I had about storytelling and stuff before college that I realized that a lot of those ideas were things that this guy named Joseph Campbell thought about and wrote about, right? It's like, oh, so you know, someone's already thought about this and researched this smarter than me, right? And then I realized, oh, George Lucas knew about this and used, right? And so that all hooked me back into Star Wars in a new way. And I became
not
really
sure George Lucas knew about it. Kurosawa knew about it, and George Lucas knew about Kurosawa.
Well, I mean, Lucas says he knew about it, so I don't know. But
Lucas says a lot of things.
I mean, you might be right about that. But the point is, it plugged me into that franchise in a new way, and then I became a fan of Star. I mean, I'm a Star Wars fan. I mean, I am. But that happened very gradually after, you know, after college or in college, really. So yeah, this has happened to me many times where I didn't really have a particular interest in something or it was a very casual interest. And then it got deeper as I approached it from a different mindset and a different perspective. So
not me. My interests have not changed since I was about 8.
Well, I know that's not true. But anyway, it's happened with kaiju movies. And so, but it wasn't a good movie. I mean, I'd never recommend it unless someone likes that kind of thing.
Having only experienced it via, you know, Wikipedia articles and pitch meetings and stuff. The series is getting very Power Rangers in that they keep you going by just adding in new bits, just stapling on. And seriously, we got Hollower Earth. The last movie was about Hollow Earth, and this one was about, oh, there's another Hollow Earth under that Hollow Earth.
Well, in the TV show, weirdly, they seem to abandon the Hollow Earth thing, and just it was more of a there is some kind of a multi-dimensional portal. Like if you try if you try to go through the Earth, you'll never get to the center of it because between here and there, there's a portal, and then you go through the portal and you go to a whole different place.
Oh,
that's kind of what the
multiverse.
Yeah, that's kind of what the show did, I thought, and then the movie kind of gets back to this. Oh no, there's a Hollow Earth, all right, and blah blah blah. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. But
and then we just keep giving King Kong new weapons.
Well, so I mean, when I liked it as a kid, it was very much the, oh, here's a toy and you smash them together, right? I mean, and so that was the appeal of it then, and there's still a little bit of that now. Of course there is.
Yeah, but you got to give them a lot of accessories.
But that didn't make me a fan of it back then, and it wouldn't make me a fan of it now. I have to appreciate like some of the metaphors and, you know, stuff like that, which is, that's not big in these movies. But it was in the original Godzilla. It was in Godzilla Minus One. It was, and in the show, it kind of was. So, you know, it's pretty fun. It's, but I would never. I mean, the movie was just not good. I can't believe it made so much money. I'm glad it did because I want them to make some more. But it was.
It's
not
how
good.
This thing works. I was just thinking about this recently. The Jurassic World trilogy. There were two things that every movie had in common. One. Everyone in the world agrees each movie is crap.
Hmm.
And two, everyone went and saw them. And they they each made over $1 billion.
Yeah, a lot of money. Weird.
And as much as I would love to do the whole people are stupid thing, I'm like, no. People can find movies fun that aren't good. In fact, I'm going to talk about one.
Yeah.
Coming up here, and it's not my version of fun, but I get it. I'm a little sad that it's becoming such an all-consuming aspect of the business,
right? Like if it was just a few movies like that, fine, but it seems like all the movies are like that.
Everybody's going for that, and it sucks for me because I'm not interested in them, but I get it.
Yeah,
but that's the some people revel in the fact that they enjoy movies that critics hate. So do I, old movies. But yeah.
Well, how was your week? Let's go ahead and get started on that because that's all really I had to talk about.
I have stalled out a little on Starfield.
Mm. I thought you were kind of just getting revved up there.
Partially because I hit a plot point that I was not aware was coming, in which no matter how you do a thing, one of your companions is going to die.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I haven't done their little side quests or anything yet. I haven't even figured out who I want to romance. So I found a save that was a few hours back and not before I'd hit this particular quest line, and I'm back there, but it means I'm not moving the main story forward. And also it's just a Bethesda game. It's all getting samey. It's a land on planet though. There's an outpost, kill the guys, spend an hour and a half looting everything. Like, I don't know. It lost its sheen. I probably will go back to it, but I don't know. Currently, the game that I'm surprisingly addicted to is a little game called Rolling Hills. That's a very simple version of like one of those farming simulators where your grandpa gave you a farm and you go there and you farm and you meet the villagers and it's all wonderful. Except instead of a person who inherits a farm, you're a sushi making robot.
Okay, those are almost the same thing.
The funniest bit is that none of that is a joke. I'm literally a sushi robot who got told to come to this town that was a bustling metropolis and open a sushi restaurant. And then it turned out it was a lie. It's just a little dinky town.
Oh.
And I have a sushi restaurant. And I serve sushi to people, and then the rest of the time I go around and I meet people and I make friends and stuff, and slowly I upgrade my sushi things, and there is a storyline going on, and it's 100% like a Harvest Moon or a Story of Seasons or whatever, but instead of, you know, a human and a farm, it's a sushi robot and a sushi restaurant.
Why does that sound funny to me? It sounds hilarious.
Because it's ridiculous. And it's also why Rolling Hills is a pun. It's the name of the town, but it's also sushi rolls and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's going to be quite short. I've only played a few hours, and we've kind of established sort of what I think the main arc is, and it has three parts, and I've done the first part, and I'm about to do the second, so like, I feel like it's not going to be super long because it's a very simple game, but I'm having a fun time with it.
Oh, good.
It's a good time. It's good. Cute. I watched a bunch of movies. Trish invented what I think is going to be the best way to celebrate Independence Day going forward. I had no intention of celebrating it in any fashion.
Oh.
No, I'm not boycotting anything. I just don't give a shit. And fireworks are loud and scare my pets, and there are crowds and it's hot and I don't want it. So it was just going to be a day like any other day. And then Trish said, I have come up with a plan for how we will celebrate Independence Day. And I said, oh, really? And she said, yeah. I said, please enlighten me. And she said, we're going to order barbecue from Jimmy Jack's, which is our favorite barbecue place. We're going to get high. And then we're going to watch the movie Independence Day. And let me tell you right now,
I
it
saw
has
that
made a
last one
patriot
coming.
out of me.
I saw that last one coming.
It was a hell of a
Yeah.
time. It is so weird to watch that movie now. And not necessarily in a bad way. It is so intensely 90s in so many ways. I was doing an ongoing list in my head of reasons this movie couldn't be made now, which is bad news for Roland Emmerich because he keeps trying to make this movie and nobody's into it anymore. But it's weird how many things do hold up. The effects, for one, surprisingly.
Really?
Also, that speech, Bill Pullman's speech, kicks ass. But that was especially fun because we recently watched The Serpent and the Rainbow for the
Oh yeah,
first
he's
time.
in that. I forgot.
And I was sitting here going, I hope the president doesn't get stabbed through his scrotum during this movie. So that was weird. But also, the movie is just loaded with people that you're like, oh my God, they were in this. They went on to be like a famous person. I mean, there's a lot of people you already knew. I also think it might be the last movie that Will Smith put a little bit of Fresh Prince into his performance. I think after this, he got serious actor guy, but in this one, it's still a little there. It's weird. It was a fun time, but it's so 90s in just its vibe, in its message, in that weird, let's all get along. It's a very I don't see color kind of politics in it, in a weird way, especially with all the different countries coming together to destroy the aliens, including countries that I'm like, we definitely would not be including them anymore in this list. So it was a fun time. And barbecue is tasty. So I highly recommend that as a way to celebrate Independence Day. By coincidence, not by coincidence, it was July 4th. That day, the pitch meeting for the sequel movie dropped.
Yeah,
And
I
at no
forgot all
point
about that.
have either of us been interested in seeing the sequel, and that's
Yeah, I
just
haven't seen it. I don't think we will.
funny. I also forgot Vivica Fox is a goddamn superhero in that movie. Like she gets stuck after the explosion and everything and barely survives, and the next thing you know, she's found an old truck and she's just collecting the wounded. Yeah, she saves the day all over the place. It's
I don't
also
know.
fun because the president's wife in that movie is the president in Battlestar Galactica.
Oh yeah. Oh man. I guess I've forgotten a lot about that film. I think I've only really
Also,
seen it once.
it's the tail end of people trying to make Jeff Goldblum sexy. Also, perfect casting in that if you told me Judd Hirsch was actually Jeff Goldblum's dad, I would believe you. Like they nail that one. It's a crazy ass movie. Yeah, so watch that. We watched The Abyss because we had never seen The Abyss. You seen The Abyss?
Yeah.
You saw The Abyss?
Well, what'd you think of it?
Nah. I mean, I think it's a good movie. The effects hold up real well.
Do they?
Only 10% of it is aliens, and that's the only part I liked.
Oh.
The rest of it is unlikable people trying not to drown. For over 2 hours. So I didn't love that. But it's got a bunch of great people from back in the day, and that's fun. And I mean, I suppose there's good chemistry. There's a romance angle that was very much of the time, but doesn't need to be there. Yeah, it's not a great time for me, but it's fine. I mean,
that's
pretty, and
I think that's technically even an 80s.
It's 89.
Yeah. Yep.
And then I made Trish watch a movie that is much beloved to me, Sneakers.
Man, I haven't seen Sneakers for a while, but that's a film I saw multiple times.
Sneakers. I love Sneakers. It is a mess. No part. For those of you not familiar, Sneakers is a 90s film. It's a heist film. It's a con film, largely about computers. Every single element of the plot makes zero sense. The story does not hold together if you think about it for the length of time it takes you to blink. It does not understand computers. It does not understand cons. It does not understand government. It does not understand. It does not understand causality. None of it makes sense. However, it has one of the most stellar casts in the history of the world, and they are so on. It is only in Sneakers can you see Dan Aykroyd spouting conspiracy theories at Sidney Poitier enough that he decides he needs to leave the room multiple times. This movie has Robert Redford. This movie has Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
This movie has Dan Aykroyd. This movie has River Phoenix.
Yep.
This movie has Ben Kingsley in possibly the weakest link in the whole cast. I don't know what performance he's going for, but it's weird. It has the president from Battlestar Galactica.
I was going to say, there's a theme here. Mary McDonnell is like,
yes,
your
Mary
theme
McDonnell's
here.
Everywhere. And it was so weird to see her so repeatedly, so quickly. It has Stephen Tobolowsky, who you see him, you'll know. He's in everything. He's Ned Ryerson. That's who Stephen Tobolowsky is. He's fucking Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day, but he's also in everything else. It has James Earl Jones. It has a dude who I've seen in so many things since then, who had a less successful career, but he keeps acting. He was the doctor in the show Alphas. There was recently a film made by some religious group where he played God. Like, the whole thing is like God calls up this journalist and is like, you can interview me, and he's God in that. But he's in a bunch of stuff. He plays a blind dude in this thing. It's amazing. It's an incredibly awesome, entertaining, fun, exciting movie. Again, makes no sense. Like, no aspect of the plot. This makes Leverage episodes look like a documentary. Like, none of it holds up plot-wise at all. Yeah. None of it. But it's just so fun, and they're so good. And it's just, everybody's got such great chemistry, and it's just a fun romp.
It's a real, it is a good demonstration of how you can take something that script-wise is pretty low quality, but if you craft it well in every other way, including good acting and all that stuff, it can really overcome that.
Yeah, see, I don't even want to say script-wise. I want to say plot-wise, because the dialogue is on.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean, awesome. I give a lot of that to the actors and the chemistry they have.
Possibly. We don't know how much it helped out, but yeah, it's, and I was never sure because I originally watched the movie. I think I've talked before, a guy I went to high school with killed himself. while we were in high school, and due to various reasons, I blamed myself, and that was the first time I ever went to therapy and stuff like that. Anyway, a couple of days after this happened, somebody got the great idea to go and grab a bunch of us and go to somebody's house, and we just watched movies and like were together. And some people made out under blankets, whatever. We all respond to trauma differently. But one of the things we watched was Sneakers. And so I'm always like, do I love that movie because of what it helped at the time?
Yeah.
But no, movie kicks ass. I highly recommend. As walk in knowing it's not going to make any sense. It's a hell of a fun time. Trish wasn't as into it. I don't know, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, last time I saw it was not that long ago, and I liked it again. But I had all the same, like you said, the plot doesn't make sense, and the, you know, it's not how computers or government or any of that stuff works. But it still holds up. It's at least it's fun for me to watch anyway.
And then my wife decided just the other night that she wanted me to see the Pixar movie Inside Out. She had seen it without me at some point, probably at a family thing, and she liked it, and she wanted me to see it because the second one is out on Disney
and very Plus. Successful. I mean, it's already made $1 billion.
She wants to see that.
Yeah.
And I said okay, and we watched it. After it was done, I said, so how you feel? And she said, I apparently forgot all the reasons why this is a terrible movie for you. And I said, yep. Yeah, it is. This movie was very, very bad. I should say, I think Inside Out is probably a very good movie, in particular a good children's movie. I think it can teach some valuable lessons to children. It is a terrible movie for me for a couple of major reasons.
Yeah, what reasons? I'm curious. Because I've only seen it once.
Maybe some spoilers for Inside Out. Fucking cope. It's a kid's movie. You know how it's going to go. Well, first of all, emotional balance and emotional regulation is something I have struggled with my whole life, continue to struggle with. So it's a hot button issue for me. And for somebody to take kid movie logic with it is difficult for me to deal with. But more than that, and it makes me a little surprised because you and I share this thing, I don't know. The metaphor is imperfect.
I would say so, yeah.
Very much. So I'm left with two options because I have to make sense of it. I either focus on that and focus on continuity and focus on lore and focus on how it all fits together, in which case I'm just annoyed because the movie doesn't make any sense. Like nothing. The rules are nonsense. And even like the lesson is nonsense. Like at the end, I'm so glad that at the end of the movie, an 11-year-old girl's sense of happiness learned a very valuable lesson about the importance of a 11-year-old girl's sense of sadness. It's really good that the sense of happiness could learn this lesson so that they could be a more mature, more three-dimensional sense of happiness.
Yeah.
And just everything, because there's so many mechanical bits, and I'm like, how does this work? When we're getting out of the memory dump with the wagon, I have way issues about, like, is the singing what's powering it, or is it actual physics? Because Bing Bong jumps out, which implies he has mass, and that's what does it, and that's a whole, but we were singing, and the speed of it, like, none of that. Or I let myself into it and take it as it is. In which case, that movie's goddamn horrifying. Like, the implications of the emotional control and the, we all get sad because Bing Bong dies, spoiler alert, Bing Bong dies, everybody's sad. Other people in her mind also die in the movie. In some cases, actually in most cases, as a joke. Like, there's a lot of serious fucked up stuff that's happening in this kid's brain that's played for laughs.
Mm.
Like, there's, if you really were like, this is what's happening in this 11-year-old, not to mention she goes through, and I'm sitting here trying to make work of it. I'm like, okay, so you have no happiness, you have no sadness, you have fear, anger, and disgust. And that makes you do what she does. And then near the end, when they can't control everything and the console's turning black and everything, I'm like, holy shit. Is this how she becomes a sociopath? is this how psychopaths are built? Because their happiness and their, like, is this what's going to happen here? I mean, obviously not. It'll get happy. But I'm like, is that what is happening here? But no, because sadness shows up and is able to successfully make her forget the idea of running away. And that cures her psychopathy. Because also no intellect. She's 11. All of her emotions are much stupider than an 11-year-old. Mm. Nobody's, like, I understand she's 11. Nobody in her brain is even as smart as an 11-year-old.
Mm.
There's no intellectual component at all. That's problematic for me, and also leads to a bunch of terrible decisions. There's a lot of, like, things that go weird because of mechanical issues, which I'm like, I don't even know what to do with that.
yeah, what's that a metaphor for?
Happening in the real world is pretty dark.
Mm, mm, mm,
mm. Even, like her whole speech about, like, I mean, and it was sweet, it was well done, but, like, the whole, I know you guys want me to be happy, but I'm sad, and like, I can't hold that. I'm like, yeah, that's fucked up. That, like, that's the lesson you got from your parents. And I understand why, because I saw how they behave. Like, they're pretty awful. Like, it's just, and I'm not even happy. The second one, we bring in new emotions because puberty's happening. But in the first one, we see inside several other people and a dog, and they only ever have the five emotions. So where the feck are their other emotions? Because people are like, oh, no, it just happens at puberty and it goes away. I'm like, bullshit. Anxiety has lived in the center chair of my console for a very long time. And I'm well past puberty. So this is like, it's just a mix of this doesn't make sense and annoys me. And this triggers a lot of very specific, terrible things for me.
Mm-hmm.
Brought together.
Mm-hmm.
So I did fine. About 20 minutes in, Trish was like, do you want to stop? It seems to make you, it'd be making you uncomfortable. Like, it makes me incredibly uncomfortable. I don't think I'll be okay if I don't see how it ends. So we watched it. And I think it's probably a good movie if you're not me.
I mean, well, I'm not you, and I didn't like it. I didn't hate it, though. I heard a lot of people say positive things about it. And some of the positive things they said about it, I did not agree with. I had some of the same problems that you're mentioning. Some of them, I didn't think through it as much as you did, but it bothered me, right? And then, and now that you're talking about it, I go, yeah, that also bothered me. I didn't really think it through, but
have to, because you and I obsess over continuity and lore more than most.
Right.
And in sometimes that is good and fine. And in a lot of movies especially, you're not supposed to. And so it can trip you and especially me up.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But I think in this case, one thing you and I also have always thought about is whether or not this is useful as a metaphor for, like, mental health and things like that.
I think it can be for children.
Or certain people,
it's
anyway.
It's a very simplified aspect. Yeah. And ultimately, the main thing you're getting out of it is the two ideas of, one, it's okay to have conflicting emotions in your brain at once.
Mm-hmm.
And two, sadness, which seems completely useless, has an important role to play, mm-hmm, in your emotional processing, mm-hmm, and things,
right,
like that. And I think it does okay with those concepts, but, again, through a child's eyes.
But. Sure. But it does a lot of other things that, like, back then I didn't think made sense. And I'd have to watch it again. I've been thinking about this since the new one's out, made $1 billion or whatever. I've been thinking, all right, well, now that I'm through this master's program in therapy, maybe if I watch it again, I'll think it's more useful. I have a feeling I'm going to, it's just going to reinforce the thoughts and feelings I had before, because I've always had a problem with how emotions are treated and dealt with. Well, like you were saying a little bit ago about how, well, why is it all just feelings and overpowering feelings? What is there any place here for, like you said, intellect? I mean, I don't know what the best analogy or metaphor would be in there, but it was lacking that for sure.
Herman's head was the best analogy.
Okay. Well,
96, actually, I take it back. It's terrible, but it had all the people in his head, and one of them was intellect.
Okay. Well, so
intellect and it, basically the id and kindness and somebody else. I don't know. But one of them was the intellect.
But I mean, at the time, people were saying, oh, well, so this follows, you know, clinical findings, blah, blah, blah. No, that's garbage. And a lot of the stuff about emotions is so completely made up. I mean, you can get as a, you know, one of the things you can get as a therapist, like hang on your wall, there's this emotions wheel, and there's like four basic ones, and then there's 16 that come out from that. And that none of that is backed by as much clinical stuff as people want to say. Emotions also... emotions don't really happen to you. Emotions are actually kind of late in the process. And, you know, when you experience something and you make judgments about it, and then emotions kind of come. And it's not that you can control them. I'm not saying you have absolute control over them. I'm just saying they come later in the process of cognition than a lot of people say. So when you put it all together, and I watched this movie before, and I have a feeling I will probably watch it again just to see what I think of it now. I think my criticism is going to be the same. It's like, this is an analogy and metaphor of this. I don't think it's a very good one. And another layer to it not being a good one is they probably take it too, like most analogies, you can take it too far and it breaks down. I think that happens with this one too. And so it doesn't really impress me that much.
Well, I don't know if it applies to the first one. I kind of assume it does, but apparently with the second one, they did, you know, consult with psychologists.
What? So. Yeah, well, they were supposed to have done that with the first one. Like, again, that was a big thing people said about, oh, wow, this really is a good exploration of how emotions really work. I didn't think so. Not even an 11-year-old. But maybe. I have no idea.
I think it could be useful to kids, like probably younger than 11. But, I mean, it hits the same things I have with every Disney and Pixar movie. Like, I can pick apart Frozen and say it doesn't make a damn bit of sense. The message it's supposed to give isn't there.
The parody is
weird.
Like
all those same, I can pick apart Toy Story just fine. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Like they all, because they're kids things, which is fine. And which is why I largely don't watch these things anymore, because they're not for me. Mm-hmm. And there's no point at me picking them apart. And so this has all of that. But again, something very near and dear to my heart, my emotions, and also very triggering for me as a topic. I might watch the second one because now I'm just sort of curious where it's going to go a little bit. And Trish wants to, and I'm not, it's fine. I'm working on pushing my comfort zone on some of this stuff. Right. I think I am coddling myself too much in some of these, but, and I mean, I'm fine. It's not like I had nightmares about the movie or anything, but yeah, definitely not for me.
I'll probably watch it again before I watch. I'll watch them both, mostly because, I mean, it's Pixar. I'm going to watch most Pixar things anyway. But yeah, also because it is relevant to, you know, what I do. It's relevant to the conversation around these things. And again, I'm not sure our current academic understanding of emotions is very accurate or robust. And so, and I know it's just a movie and I know it's made for kids, but it generates conversation with actual professionals about these things and recommending, oh, you should have this client see this movie because it'll help them. It's like, well, will it, you know, do I agree that that's going to be working for that particular client? I'm sure it works for some, but
maybe I'll talk about this in therapy tomorrow. I got therapy tomorrow.
That's interesting. I think I would be interested to know what your therapist says about it, because I don't know what her perspective on these things are. But every time you talk about your sessions and stuff, it's always interesting to hear what she has to say.
I also saw another movie that I want to briefly mention because we're about out of time. And I don't think we're going to get to that one email that's sitting there. We will get to it, Stu. You are keeping this podcast alive at this point. But not today. I saw a different movie on Shudder. I don't know if I recommend it. It's not a great movie. It's called Chad Gets the Actually specifically called Hashtag Chad Gets the Axe. And it is another of what is becoming an outgrowth of my favorite genre of paranormal investigators go look in a haunted house and get gorbled by demons. And this is social media influencers go investigate a haunted house and get gorbled by demons.
Okay.
And in fact, there have been enough of these now that it made me wonder, and I asked my teenage sources of information if these kind of things really exist. Are there actual YouTubers who like spend the night in a famously haunted house? Apparently, yes, they are.
Yeah.
But this one is all done via live stream, and it's actually several different influencers who go together, and so sometimes you switch between them, but it's the term found footage doesn't apply anymore, but it's all live stream footage. And as some of these do, but this one really focused on sort of the nature of the parasocial relationship, and like, because like the whole time you see the comments going through and people believing it or not believing it and stuff like that. There's actually a really tense moment near the end where somebody in the comments says, as the guy's being like hunted by a bad guy or whatever, it's like, why are you still streaming this? And the absolute panicked influencer gets like kind of mad, and he's like, what are you talking about? I have 5 million views on this. This is the most crazy thing that's ever happened to me, and you think I'm just gonna stop? And then he pauses and he's like, why are you still watching this? But then there's also like weird shit. Like throughout, there's a one person who comes in, and it turns out they're a high school chemistry teacher, and they made a deal that if their class did well enough on the exam, they'd watch this live stream. And the big joke running through it, if you have to follow the comments to see it, because sometimes you get distracted, but he keeps trying to use the word yeet correctly and failing.
Really? That's
And
hilarious.
like the whole community, because he's on there for the whole time. And so the other ones are like keep getting so frustrated with him. They're like, damn it, what are you doing? And near the end, he finally just uses it as a generic exclamation, and he's like, did I get that right? And they're like, you know what? It was close enough. We're proud of you. And then at the very end, like after everybody's dead and everything, he's like, I enjoyed the interactive nature of this movie. And then somebody else is like, guys, don't worry. I'm a student in his class. I'll explain it to him tomorrow. But like the end credits shows just a bunch of like social media replies and people like remixing sound effects or talking about whether the people deserve to die, and in a very realistic sort of way that I thought was a very interesting take on it. That being said, it's your usual bullshit. It's obnoxious influencers get garbled. But I just thought it, and these are not new areas to think about, but I feel like a lot of them haven't done as good a job with it. With this idea of A, how an influencer lives and how an influencer thinks, and then B, how the audience thinks of them. So yeah, if you have Shudder, hashtag Chad gets the X. It's also not very long, so that helps.
That was a cute idea though with the chemistry teacher. That was.
Yeah, there's a few bits like that. You also occasionally get just spam. People talking about hot girls in your area and stuff like that, or it's they do a very good job of realistic live stream commentary. And the people who are like freaked out and the people who aren't. And then there's a whole saga with somebody used to call 911. And people are thinking about it, and other people are like, it's not real. He calls 911, but he's famous enough that they literally think he's pranking them and they hang up on him. He gets a hold of like his cousin, and his cousin doesn't really believe it's real either. And so his cousin sort of is gonna call the thing, but his cousin is trying to get a reality show off the ground, so he won't do it until the influencer E signs a contract on his phone. And he's just at dinner while this is going. Like, it's a whole, because there's, yeah, they do like FaceTime ones and stuff as well. It's,
I wonder how they wrote the comment section. I mean, I wonder if they like wrote that separate or they improvised that. I mean, that's,
and then there's things, because like somebody dies and then the killer has their phone and keeps streaming. And so you'll be on another one and the comments are like, yo, you got to check out so-and-so's stream. It's weird. And one guy loses his phone and they track it because it's streaming, and it becomes a whole, like, it, for a basic ass, cheap ass idea, they did some really interesting stuff with it, I thought.
But overall, you didn't think it was that great a film.
I mean, it's a genre that sucks. Like, the best movies I have seen in this genre aren't great. But it's one of my favorites, I would say. Huh. It's not quite Hell House LLC, but it's up there. And Hell House LLC is the one I held up as like my favorite ever of the found footages. And I think it is. I also wouldn't blame people if they're like, yeah, it was super boring, I hated it. I feel like the whole genre is sort of an acquired taste, but I'm glad I saw it. I enjoyed it a lot more than the vast majority of the ones I see. There are some good ones, though. There's one called Followed. I don't know. They all start to blur together a little bit sometimes.
Right.
And I'm like, I think I've seen this one, but some of the burgeoning sort of YouTuber ones, where it's, they moved into a new apartment and they vlog and like it turns out the place is haunted and stuff like that. And those ones, some of those do play with this whole like people don't think it's real and that kind of thing. But, it was not bad.
Hashtag Chad
gets the axe.
Gets the axe.
Because that's what they say at the end when he gets. They're like, oh yeah, because they kind of don't like it.
Oh.
It's also weird because for the first like third of the movie, the main character isn't the main character. Like, you think it's a different guy, and then he dies pretty early. And it kind of, I mean, like I said, there's several of them and it switches back and forth. But I would say there is one who is the primary character of the film, and it is not the person that is introduced as the primary character of the film. So that was interesting. All right. If you want to live stream your death, go to the blog and tell us about it, themagicoftalkinghat.com. We'll check it out. Hashtag hat listeners get the harpoon gun. I don't know. That's a terrible episode title. Not going to use that. No. Maybe just gorbled by demons is probably.
Gorbled, yeah. Where did you get that? Gorbled.
I think I got that from the Scaredy Cats. I think Mildred on Scaredy Cats uses gorbled.
Gorbled.
Gorbled. Also, please email us, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I didn't explain that in the beginning, but do that. And, you know, comment on the blog or on YouTube. Let us know you're out there, because some of us put way too much of our sense of self-worth into this sad little podcast. And so we need all the help we can get. And by some of us, I mean William. He's a sad, sad man.
Yeet.
Yeet.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.